we talked about partial derivatives. Partial f, partial x, which means the derivative with other inputs constant.
Is that a 2f? Or?
It's not a 2. It's its own symbol. It's not... Likewise, you can take the derivative with respect to any of the inputs, and if you hold the other inputs constant, we call it a partial derivative. Now, sometimes people like to cut down on their writing, so they introduce abbreviations. So they'll just put a subscript to indicate the variable they're taking the partial derivative with respect to. It's just an abbreviation. Okay. Now, if we go back even further, back in chapter 12, we talked about optimizing functions and concavity. And it was all about finding critical points. And at a critical point, different things could happen. The second derivative usually could tell you what happened. So here's a critical point. And what's the sign of the second derivative in this picture? Positive or negative?
Negative.
Negative, yeah, it's concave down. The first derivative is decreasing because it switches from positive slope to negative slope. Okay. And then over here, this would be another critical point. Whereas now, it's concave up, the second derivative is positive. If the second derivative is zero, all kinds of weird stuff could happen. You could even just have a graph that was constant. Who knows what happens if the second derivative test fails? You'd have to look more carefully at the function. Is it? You could still tell, like here, it's switching from increasing to decreasing, so you could still tell that's a local maximum, but take more effort. Now, if we have two inputs, we have this picture, but it gets, of course, naturally a little more complicated if there's two inputs. So I'll try to indicate that. So this folder has any old assignments that if you weren't there the day I returned them, it might be in this folder. And we've got a pile here of the homework that's due. Now, let's see about multiple inputs here. So, in order to think about the analog of the second derivative, you have to deal with the fact that now there's several ways to take a second derivative. Right? There's two kinds of first derivatives. Is now a point of two inputs, and both of the partial derivatives have to be zero. So you have to solve a system of equations now. So already that's going to make things harder. You have to get both of these partial derivatives to be zero. If they're not both zero, then you would have a slope, either in the x direction or the y direction. If you have a non-zero slope either in the x direction or the y direction, then you can move up or down that slope. Hence, you're neither at a minimum nor a maximum, because you could go a little bit one way to go to make the function lower, you could go a little bit another way to make the function higher. And since you could go either a little bit one way or the other in the x direction or the y direction, you need both of those to be zero slopes, to be at a local minimum or maximum. Now, it is still the case, though, that some critical points are not local extrema. You could have something weird like this. That problem actually gets more common when there's multiple inputs because of the problem of saddle points. Trying to describe that. So the idea is, okay, you can take a partial derivative once. Now for second derivatives, there's several ways you can do it. You can take the x derivative of the x derivative. So take the x derivative twice, and usually they like to write this. Although if you use the partial symbol, then the notation would look like this. You could do the same thing, take the y derivative of the y derivative, it's now y in place of x, take the y partial derivative twice. And then there's what are called the mixed second partials. You could take the y derivative of the x derivative, or you could take the x derivative of the y derivative. And again, these are all partial derivatives. And here the notation gets a little weird, because with this partial symbol notation, it works from right to left. So first you take the x partial, then the y partial. Whereas here you're working from left to right, x partial, then y partial. So potential for confusion there. Fortunately, it doesn't matter which order you take these two derivatives here. If you take one x partial derivative and one y partial derivative, it doesn't matter which one you do first. So these are the second derivatives. When we allow two inputs, then you end up with three kinds of second partial derivatives. The the pure x second partial, the pure y second partial, and then the mixed second partial, where you took one derivative for each input. And what you do then, if you want to figure out what is this critical point like, we have a more complicated kind of second derivative test. So just like back in chapter 12, you have to plug in your critical point into the second derivatives. Make sure I match what the book does. I think the book does it this way. Yeah. I think that's the book's notation. It's totally arbitrary what you... These are just symbols to make it easier to remember what happens. And... Okay. And so here's what happens. If you have... AC minus B squared. This basically is related to the classification of different quadratic equations in X and Y. When do you get a hyperbola, when you get an ellipse, basically. So, if this quantity, the second x partial times the second y partial divide or minus the square of the mixed partial is negative, then your critical point is actually a saddle point. So what does that look like? It looks something like this. It means you have a critical point, and then how does the function behave? Well, in one direction, it looks like you're at a local minimum. It's kind of like you're out on a mountain pass. Because from another direction, it looks like you're at a local maximum. Like you're driving up, and then you come to the pass, and then you come back down. But on either side, there are these high mountain peaks that you went between. And so it looks something like this. And you could rotate this picture, and it would also be a saddle point. If you try and graph it in 3D, again, it looks, you know, like a horse saddle, something like that. So your critical point is right there in the picture of the 3D graph. And so these are not local minima or local maxima. If you make what's called a tangent plane, it will be horizontal. You do get a zero slope in the x and y direction, but unfortunately it's not a local min or local max. So things get more complicated here. If this quantity, a times c minus b squared, comes out positive, then it becomes like the one variable case where you're either at the top of the hill or the bottom of a bowl. And you can just look at, it actually doesn't really matter. You can look at either the pure second x partial or the pure second y partial and just look at the sign of it. So if it's, say, maybe I should... So if we're in this case, then it divides into two subcases. This is the concave down case and the concave up case. So if you were plotting level curves or contours, then it might look something like that. I mean, the case where it's a local max. You got basically the same picture, just labeled differently in the case where it's a local minimum. And if you have one a 3D view, it would look something like this. Well, maybe I should have them. Maybe I should put like with like. So there's your local max. Over here, the picture of a local min. So you end up with three cases now. And that's not to mention what happens if this AC minus B squared is exactly zero. Whole nother level of complexity there. Just like here, when there's one variable input, a lot of different stuff could happen then. And so you'd have to do more work. There isn't a simple test anymore to figure out what's going on. Okay, so we get this big scheme here. Now, what we need to do, of course, is use the scheme in an example. I think that will clarify how it works. Now, in my experience, the main difficulty with this is finding the critical points in the first place. And I give these open note, open book tests, so it's no problem to just write down or know the page in your book, you know, where this classification scheme here comes up. But you have to do some algebra usually to actually find the critical points in the first place. You can't find the critical points, then you can't get these numbers, and you can't classify what's happening. Okay. Here's a made-up function here. Let's see if this function has any local minima or local maxima. Okay, so we look for critical points. So we need points where the two partial derivatives are equal to zero. Well, we have to find the partial derivatives, okay? Okay, so let's see. So remember now, we're going to hold y constant when we take the x partial derivative. Right, so the derivative of this thing with respect to x now, 3x squared, and then here it's 5 times 1 times y. The 5 and the y are just constant multiples here. Right? We're holding y constant. And then here, y is still being held constant, so the derivative with respect to x, right, it's just like the derivative of any constant, it's 0. And what's going on with the y partial derivative? Now we're holding x constant and taking the derivative with respect to y. Okay, so that x cubed, now we're holding it constant. So its y derivative is 0. And now here, the 5 and the x are now constant multiples. And we're taking the derivative with respect to y. So the y derivative of that y is just 1. And now here, the derivative of y squared with respect to y is 2y, and the derivative of y with respect to y is 1.
Okay. Questions about that?
Partial derivatives takes a little getting used to. That's why I spent the whole day on these last time. Tuesday. Because if you don't have the partial derivative part right, then you're certainly not going to find the critical points. Depending on your calculator, you may be able to get your calculator to tell you the partial derivative formula. Anyways, we need to solve for this. Okay, so we can simplify it a little bit. Okay, 3x squared minus 5y. And negative 5x plus 2y minus 1. Okay. I need both of them to be 0 if I'm at a critical point. So, how do we solve a system of two equations? If the equations are linear, you could use some matrix technique, like maybe you learned Gauss-Jordan elimination or something in Business Math 1. This is not quite linear, right? There's an x squared in there, so it's a quadratic thing. But there is still the old tried and true method of solve for one variable and plug your solution into the other equations. So pick an equation that you can solve for one of the variables. How about the first equation?
So elimination wouldn't work, right?
Not for a nonlinear one. If there wasn't the squared there, I could use elimination. Your calculator may even have a solve command that works for systems. So you could also look into that. But I made this one so that it's tricky but not impossible to solve. It's got a little nonlinearity, but it's not so bad that you can't solve it at all without a calculator. So take the first equation and solve it for, say, y, because that's easier than solving for x. And what do you get? Move the 5y over there, divide by 5, Y has got to be 3/5 x squared. And then bring that into the other equation. So now 0 is negative 5x plus 2 times what y is, which is 3/5 x squared minus 1. Okay. So not surprisingly, because of the linearity, we do finally have to solve the nonlinear equation. This is a quadratic equation here. We could use the... It's 6/5 x squared minus 5x minus 1. So I could use the quadratic formula. Negative b is 5, right? A, b, c. Use the quadratic formula. Negative b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4 times a times c. So plus because of the minus 1 plus 24/5, I think. And then divided by 2a, so divided by 12/5.
I may want my calculator at this point.
So I don't think this is going to magically simplify it. I didn't specially choose the numbers to make it all magically come out to be nice round answers. Solutions. So if you have a plus there, I think you get 4.35789. Or see the other one with a minus. -1.91224. So you get two solutions, and y is equal to 3x squared divided by 5. Okay, so you got to put these together now. So remember, we got to think of these as points on the plane. Okay. So in the first case, you have 4.357 in the x coordinate, and then the y coordinate that goes with it is given by 3 times the square of this divided by 5. Okay, so take this and multiply it by 3. Well, first square it, then multiply it by 3. And then divide it by 5. So 1.139. Or, in the second case, when x is -1.912, take this and plug it into the formula for y. So square it, multiply by 3, divide by 5. And I get 0.02193. Oh, I see.
There's a little decimal place problem here. The other solution for x is not 1.9, it's 0.19 something.
My calculator is using scientific notation, so I have to look carefully at what I'm doing here.
In fact, I have the same problem over here. It's actually 11.39 for the first y-coordinates solution there. So you get these 2 points. And that should make sense to you, because what is the first equation here? 3x squared minus 5y equals 0. Or written here in terms of y equals something. That's clearly a parabola, right? And what's this other equation? It's a line. You could even solve it for y if you wanted. Y would be 1 plus 5x all over 2. So, given the nature of our equations here, a parabola and a line, it's not surprising that we got 2 solutions. The parabola hits the line at 2 places. That's a very common outcome. It's possible, of course, that the line, the parabola, only hit at 1 place or didn't cross at all, in which case we've gotten 1 or 0 solutions. But it worked out, we got 2 solutions.
Okay.
So these are the critical points. Okay. So given that, now we need to classify. Right? Using this little scheme I
elaborated down here. Right?
Okay. So we have our critical A and B, right? Of them, right? 4.35. Then we need to know those 3 numbers, right? And then
finally get a classification.
We're going to have to use our scheme here. So we need to know what are the second partial derivatives. So, for example, take the x partial of the x partial, right? So hold y constant, take the derivative with respect to x. So you get 6x here. And then the 5y is being held constant because y is held constant, so that's just a 0. What about this one? Take the y partial of the x partial, so the y partial derivative of 3x squared minus 5y here again. But now, if we're differentiating with respect to y and holding x constant, now the 3x squared is just a constant, and then the derivative of this other term will just be 5.
Right? 5y has slope 5,
if you're thinking of y as the input variable. Okay. And we also need the second y partial. So we have to take the y partial of the y partial. Okay, so... The first y partial derivative was negative 5x plus 2y minus 1. Now we take the y partial derivative of that. So holding x constant, the first term has derivative 0, the second term has derivative 2, and the last term has derivative 0. Only the 2y term actually depends on y. So it's the only term with a non-zero y partial derivative. And its y slope is 2. Okay? So this is actually pretty good news. Two of the second partial derivatives are actually constants. Okay? So I don't even need to plug in my my critical point values of those two. So what's this? In that sense, I made it easy. They'll be pretty boring if they were always all the same. So okay. I actually have to do a little bit of work. I have to take the x values and I have to multiply them by 6. Okay, so take that 4.35 whatever, multiply it by 6. You're going to get, I think, something close to 26. About 26.1, yep. Okay, take the negative 0.191, multiply it by 6. I guess you'll get something close to negative 1. Negative 1.14 or something. Okay. All right. Now we compute this thing, AC minus B squared. So, for example, 26.1 times 2 is about 52 minus the square of negative 5, so minus 25 is about 27. I don't need to know it exactly because all I care about is whether it's positive or negative, right?
What, how'd you do that?
26 times 2 is about 52. The square of negative 5 is 25. 52 minus 25 is 27. So. Yeah. And we just have to plug into our little formula here. Down here, it's going to be a little more interesting. Negative 1 point something times 2 will be negative 2. Right. And now again we're going to subtract a 25, so we're actually going to get a roughly negative 27 here. Okay. So whenever the AC minus B squared comes out negative, you know right away that you have a saddle point.
the saddle point is neither a local minimum nor a local maximum, as I illustrated here. So there's going to be just the one local extremum.
Now let's see. So the AC minus B squared came out positive. Okay, so it's either a local min or a local max. And to classify it, look at the sign of the pure second derivatives, right? Either A or C, you get the same result. You see that in this case, A is positive, right? That corresponds to the concave up case. So this is actually a local minimum. So if you plug into F to get the actual level or output of the function, this is a local minimum. Because we were in the case where AC minus B squared is positive and A is positive. So I just had to look at the signs. So the last thing to do is what is our local minimum? Plug into the original function f. Okay. So plug in the 4.35 and the 11.39 into here.
And that will finally complete this problem. Okay. On my calculator, I can use a variable symbol. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to store the 11 something.
There it is. I'm going to store it in variable B, and I'm going to store the 4.35 in a variable. I'll call it A. And then I'll have my calculator tell me what is A cubed minus 5 times A times B plus B squared minus B. Right? So just plugging in my critical point back into the original function. The result I'm getting is that negative 4.7078, etc., is a local. Yep. The last thing to do is, if you're being asked what is the local min or the local max, that's asking for an output level, so you have to actually plug into the original function at the end. Sometimes people only ask where is it, right? In that case, all you need to do is just find that critical point and then figure out, okay, is it a local min or a local max? So this local minimum is at this input. Usually how we would describe it. Questions or comments about this? What I'd like to do is actually show you a picture of this. I can have the computer graph it, and we can actually see
a view of this, so we can actually see the local minimum and the saddle point. Again, in my experience, people generally get the classification part right. If they make a mistake, it's either they do a partial derivative wrong, or they don't solve this system of equations here.
That's usually where the difficulties come up. Function was x cubed minus 5xy plus y squared minus 1. Okay, so I just went to wolframalpha.com and it's a quick and dirty way to do this stuff. So here I asked it to plot it. There's a little 3D bit of it. Okay. It's so the local minimum is down here.
We need to adjust the lights. That one. Okay, that's better.
The local minimum is down there. And the saddle point is over here, and you can see it better in this. The bottom of the bowl is somewhere around there. Remember, the critical point was x is 4 point something, and y is 11 point something, so that's around here. And then our other critical point was around x and y were both pretty close to 0. Negative 0.19 something for x, negative 0.02 something for y. So that's right about there. And you can see that's indeed a saddle point. If you're right here, then you can just change your position a little bit to make the function go lower by going along this line. But if you went along this line here, that would make the function go higher. So your saddle point's right there, and your local minimum is happening around here. So in the 3D picture, the saddle point, it kind of cut off. It'd be nice if I could convince it to zoom out, but anyways, saddle point's around here, the local minimum's around here somewhere. Okay. You can graph other things as well. Give you an idea of what's possible. So here's a classic one. Take say x to the fourth minus 10x squared plus y to the fourth minus say 10y squared. Look what this does. This one has 9 critical points. Not going to make you find all of them. Very interesting. 9 critical points. 4 of the critical points are local minima. 1 critical point in the middle is a local maximum. And then there's also 4 saddle points. Right? So this is another function, not the one we just did. Right? This one, a little more.
a little more work to deal with. It's not too hard to find the 9 critical points. It's just the problem of then, well, now you have 9 things you have to classify. Here's the contour level picture. So you can see here, and here, and here, and here, local minima. In the middle, there's a local maximum. And then there's saddle point, saddle point, saddle point, saddle point. That's the kind of complexity you could have in principle. What's going on there is that the x partial derivative is a cubic function of x, and so it has 3 solutions that are x values when you make it 0. And then the y partial derivative of this thing is just a cubic polynomial in y, and it has, and it's 0 at 3 different y values. And so to make them both 0, you can try any of the 3 x values and any of the 3 y values. So you get 9 solutions. Because instead of a parabola crossing a line, it's 3 vertical lines crossing 3 horizontal lines. So you can have more complicated stuff like that. And of course, you can go to Wolfram Alpha and, or have your calculator, if it can do it, do a 3D plot and see a lot of stuff like this if you're curious about it. And going back to the one we were doing, it's here, right? Local minimum around here, saddle point around here. That's how you can classify stuff. Now, in general, though, if you're doing applications, most of the time, just like when we did a lot of optimization story problems, what usually happens is there's only one critical point, or only one critical point that makes sense. Like the other critical point is a negative price or something. Or a negative quantity or a negative length. So usually there's only one critical point that makes sense in an actual application. So usually if you just find that critical point, it's probably what you want. If you're not sure, you can go through all the classification stuff. Usually for things that come from the real world, so to speak, as opposed to arbitrary made-up things, there's just one critical point that could possibly be the answer, and that's usually, yes, it is the local min or the local max you want. Let me show you a simple optimization here. This is a very natural problem. I'm going to have some data points, right? About 4 data points. One data point would be here. So I have 1 and 1. Well, we have inputs of 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay. So you have some data here, right? Maybe this is some price discovery, I don't know, or some historical data about
cost of something. The point is, a lot of times you have data from the real world, and it's messy and it's noisy. What you'd like to do, in this example, this is not the only kind of two-variable optimization.
Let's understand it by ignoring the less important stuff.
Maybe you think that there you could get away with just modeling this data by a simple line, right? Could we fit a line to this data? It would have some slope and some intercept. Could we do it? Well, there's two things you have to optimize. Right? There's M and there's B, the slope and the intercept, right? And we need to have some kind of quantitative measurement of what's a good line and what's a bad line. Now, there's a lot of philosophical stuff you could get into about that and a lot of tricky statistical questions. But there's a pretty crude method that actually works surprisingly well and has a lot of good justifications for it, at least under some reasonable sets of assumptions. And the main benefit of it, though, is that it's something that's actually easy to optimize. The math is not fiendishly difficult. You actually have some hope of finding the critical point here. Okay, so what do we do? We measure the vertical distance to a line from our actual data points. So philosophically, this is treating the x values as known for sure, but the y values are kind of noisy. And if you could just move the y values up and down, you could get them to be on the line that you really care about, that ignores all the noise. And the idea is a line is bad if these vertical distances are big. But you don't want points below the line, that's one kind of badness, to cancel out any of the badness of a point that's above the line. Those are both bad things. So you can't just add up these vertical differences, because then you'd have positive and negatives that might cancel out. Any kind of difference is bad. So what we do, simple trick, is we square each of these things. Okay. So we take each of these vertical distances and we square it. Okay, so we have the badness of the line. So given a slope and intercept M and B, how bad is that line compared to our data? So we take this vertical distance, so we would have 1 in the y-coordinate minus the y-coordinate on the line. So 1 minus what? Or maybe I'll write it this way. I'll take the line's y-coordinate, so M times 1 in this case, because x is 1, plus b, minus the actual data point y-coordinate, and then we square it. And then for the next data point, we have m times 2 plus b, right? This x is 2, so that's where the line's y-coordinate is going to be. And then the actual y-coordinate is 1. And so we add that badness to our function. Then we have two more badnesses. Right? There are two more little errors there, these vertical errors. So we have m times 3 plus b
as the actual y-coordinate height on the line minus the data point's y-coordinate of 3. And then for the fourth data point, we have m times 4 plus b, right there, on the line.
M times 4 plus b
minus 2. Because 2 is the actual y-coordinate of the data. And we square all these so that whether these differences are positive or negative, again, any difference makes the line worse. Because you square it and it makes this function bigger. Okay? So, so then the best MB would minimize this function. So it turns out there's only going to be one critical point. That's another nice thing about this crude square vertical distances and add trick. So this m comma b is the unique solution to what? Well, we'd need partial f partial m. The m partial derivative to be 0, and we'd need the b partial derivative to be 0, right? So here we take the derivative with respect to m, and while we were doing that, we would be holding b constant. And here we'd be taking the derivative with respect to b and holding m constant. And what's even nicer about this is that when you take these partial derivatives, you actually get linear functions. Like the m partial derivative, because of the square there, it's easiest if you use a chain rule. You get 2 times this times its m partial derivative. Because of all these squares, you're going to get a bunch of 2s. So in this case, you get m plus b minus 1 times 1 plus, then here you have to use a chain rule against all this. You get twice that, so I'm keeping the 2 outside. And then the derivative of the inside function is a 2. And, let's see, should have started even further to the left. Basically the same formula, except instead of 1, 2, 3, and 4, which came from the m derivatives of these inner functions here inside the squares, m times 1, m times 2, m times 3, m times 4. Now when you differentiate with respect to b, holding m constant, the inner functions have derivatives 1, 1, 1, 1, because the derivative of b with respect to b is just 1. So you get the same thing as over there, except with a bunch of 1s instead of 1, 2, 3, 4. Now that looks like a royal pain, but...
it's great for a calculator to do it because it's a linear equation. It simplifies massively. There's a whole bunch of like terms you collect. Look at the m's, m terms. There's an m, two m's times, two times two, four m's, nine m's, and 16 m's. So 1, 4, 9, and 16. 30. Look at the b's. There's one b, two b's, three b's, four b's. That's as of to 10 b's, and then and there's some stuff here. Negative 1 times 1, negative 1 times 2, that's negative 3, negative 9, so add that, that's negative 12, then tack on an 8 here. This. So it simplifies massively. Same with this one. I think the, it's supposed to be a 1 there. In fact, the is there any difference here? Let's see. Oh yeah. Okay. So the it's 10m. Yes, and it's not 10b anymore. It's 4b. And then you have minus 1, minus 1, minus 3, minus 6. Minus 3, minus 2, so I think minus 7. So it actually simplifies massively, and a calculator can do the arithmetic more reliably than I can. You see, it just boils down to two linear equations that need to equal 0. So you can use elimination to solve it. And so this is how linear regression works. This actually gets covered in section 15.4. This is how linear regression works. I'm not requiring this, but if you're interested in it, you can read more about how this works, and you can streamline it to solve these things efficiently. Of course, your calculator probably has it automated, where you just tell it fit it to the line. It says, "Okay, here's the slope and here's the intercept." Okay, I'll give you two homework problems from the book. One of them will be kind of like this one. You have to look at some function, it's possibly rather weird, and find the critical points. Say number. And I think number 42. Number 42. Okay. All right. So, questions, comments, any horrible algebra errors?
For that problem,
yeah.
Is that it? Are those the answers, or you have to solve for m and b?
Oh, you have to solve for m and b.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't quite finish it, did I? Right?
It's like we did at the bottom one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you still have to solve. Yeah, I mean, yes, this has to be 0, and that has to be 0. But you still have to solve for it. But it's time to go. That's why I didn't quite finish it. Yeah. Well, that's not your homework, right? The homework is just from the book.
Oh, yeah, so we can learn that stuff.
Did I got that point?
I take your point. Yeah. Yeah. You do need to actually find it. Yeah. Okay. For some technical reason, they've extended the teaching evaluations. So if you want to go online and evaluate me, I think there's a link to it inside Blackboard. If you want, it's voluntary and anonymous, but it is appreciated. So if you want to do that, you can do that. And I think they gave the deadline all the way until December 2 now. It was going to be just until this Saturday. So if you haven't done that, but you want to do that, I guess do it sometime before December 2nd. And if you can't find the link for it, email me and I have a direct link to it if you want to use it. Okay, any other questions? All right, have a good weekend.